I just finished my dissertation interviewing 30 other full-time freelancers about the reasons they choose to stay full-time freelancers. And all of them are well aware of the risks, but are really happy having the freedom, flexibility, autonomy, all those kinds of things. So increasingly, people are choosing this as a permanent side hustle or full-time thing. And then what I'll be talking about at the conference is how to effectively hire freelancers and identify who would be a good fit on your team.
At militarycreatorcon.com.
And we're back. This series about Military Creator Con 2026. My name is Travis Partington. I'm going to be appearing at Military Creator Con, and I have another guest who's going to be one of our speakers at the conference. Laura Briggs does all kinds of stuff. I mean, if you checked out her LinkedIn, I'm getting tired just looking at her accomplishments and her day-to-day tasks. Laura, welcome to this session.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Now, you're going to be talking about freelance. You do coaching. You've done TEDx speeches. You've done authoring. But the conversation for us military veteran creators is around freelancing, and we will get to that in a second. But can you kind of tell us how you got immersed into the military experience for us, please?
Yes. So my husband, John, was in the Navy for 14 years. He was enlisted before I met him and then got out and got back in as an officer. And that's really when I met him. He was in his first year of medical school, and we have moved 14 times since then. So it was as a military spouse. He is civilian side now, thankfully. No more moving, hopefully. But that's really how I was introduced to it.
What was that experience 14 times, and you still love him?
Yes, I do. Definitely.
So you kind of had to be like your own freelance, you know, coordinator, organizer, project manager, and, you know, all that wrapped into one before you started doing it as a business offering. We're in this ecosystem of military and veteran creators, not just, you know, podcasters or media people, but people who are doing work that will involve them being freelancers. What drew you to that as a course or career path of study and execution, Laura?
Yeah, so I was a middle school teacher. I taught seventh grade geography. And I knew that that career wasn't going to line up well with my husband and the Navy moving him as frequently as they intended to. So I literally just took inventory of all the skills that I had. I studied economics in college, but I had an English professor who tried to convince me to change majors at one point. And so I had this like little kernel of like someone had told me that I might be a decent writer. And so I kind of took that and ran with that to start freelancing. And I really did move into that career field, started as a side hustle, but it was something that I could pick up and take with me everywhere we moved, and I could scale it up or down based on what was going on in our lives. And so it really wound up being something that was super flexible.
So right now, what do you think most people miss or misunderstand about freelancing?
Yeah, I think there's two sides to it. Like being a freelancer, I think some people view it as being really unstable. And while it's certainly true that it could be unstable, you know, I just finished my dissertation interviewing 30 other full-time freelancers about the reasons they choose to stay full-time freelancers. And all of them are well aware of the risks, but are really happy having the freedom, flexibility, autonomy, all those kinds of things. So increasingly, people are choosing this as a permanent side hustle or full-time thing. And then what I'll be talking about at the conference is how to effectively hire freelancers and identify who would be a good fit on your team. And so from that side, I think the big misunderstanding is how to do that the right way. I've met lots of people who've tried and failed. And a lot of times that comes down to process, not necessarily who they hired.
Now, when you say process, is it just how they evaluate the freelancer or their process to scale the job, get the rec, you know, quantified correctly, and then find their good match?
Yeah, I think it's really in clear understanding about what people can do, right? A lot of times I see people try to put tasks that would really be suited for 2 to 3 different freelancers into one job description and try to hire this unicorn who can do it all. And then a lot of times they hire someone that they haven't fully vetted. They haven't given this person a test job. They haven't met to make sure they have good communication alignment and instructions and feedback alignment. Those things are all really important, whether it's a short-term or long-term working relationship.
So if I'm going to hire a freelancer, I need to really clearly understand what I want and how that scales to my business. And I do understand there's a temptation to have the rainbow list of everything you want and hope that it's out there. But that's not the case, is it?
No, it's not the case. You want to start by making a list of all the things you're doing or want to do that you don't like, don't make you money, or you're really, really slow at. And that's a good list to start with, right? And then you can kind of see where are some common things. But like someone who edits your social media captions and someone who writes an email newsletter, they're not necessarily the same person. Someone may have both of those skill sets, but you want to kind of think about what umbrella can I put these different things under? And then where am I going to get the most benefit from hiring someone first? You may need three or four freelancers, but who's the one you could start with that would save you 5 or 10 hours a week? And then you can kind of go from there.
So there's an aspect too of delegation. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about delegation, Laura, I think about control, and a lot of people get very nervous giving up control to a person they're hiring. How do you get over that?
Well, you have to think about what it's holding you back from, because it is true that when before someone's trained, you're the best person to do that task. You may have it in your mind even that, well, I'm the only one who can do this the way I need it to be done. So you don't want to start big. You don't want to say, let me assign this huge project that's time sensitive and has really high stakes attached to it as the first thing you give to a freelancer. So you want to start small and scale up and build that trust. Give really good instructions. That's a place where a lot of things fall apart. Give really good feedback, not I just don't like it, or I can't put my finger on it. These are things you have to learn as someone who is outsourcing to be able to hire someone effectively and tell the difference when you really maybe did hire someone who perhaps wasn't the right fit.
You're coming to Military Creator Con 2026. How did you get connected with this conference?
Oh my goodness. Way back right before the pandemic, Kimber Hill is a longtime kind of colleague of mine in the military spouse space. And she was speaking at the PodFest that was occurring in Orlando. This was like right before everything shut down for COVID. We were literally like flying back as all that was starting. And so I came and I was on a panel with her and some other folks and was just really impressed with the conference. It was a great conference. I connected with a lot of people that I'm still in touch with today. And so when I saw this opportunity come out again, talk to James and Mara, and was like, yeah, I definitely want to be included. How can I support you all?
This is going to be it's in Texas, so it's going to be big, and it's in a big forum. What are you looking to accomplish when you come and speak with us at Military Creator Con?
My goal is to meet more people in this space and really hear about the things that they are most concerned about where I have overlap, right? So like I have a lot of experience with, you know, I have a book called Remote Work for Military Spouses. So I have like a big passion around helping military spouses find careers that work for them that are flexible. But there's also just a lot going on in the veteran space right now around other things like entrepreneurship and transition. And I'm interested in all those topics. So I'm excited to learn from other people and also connect with them to see where is there a potential collaboration where I can provide a resource or a training or just a conversation to help somebody else out. I think that's one of the things that's so great about the military community, right? It was other military spouses who helped me when I stepped into that role as a military spouse, figure out how to do things, how to make it work when you have to move 14 times, et cetera. So I kind of look at it as like, how can I pay it forward and support other people?
Just to go back a little bit, I'm curious. You have this expertise in this career field and in this space. Has your husband benefited from any of your expertise throughout his civilian career?
Yes, definitely. So,
really?
Yeah, and it was in the transition period, right? So when you spend that much time in the military, you've never negotiated a contract in your life. So when my husband went civilian side and he got his first job offer contract, I was like, you know, you can negotiate this. You can push back. And he was like, well, what do you mean? Like, this is the job. It's like, take it or leave it. It's like when, you know, when they call and tell you your next duty station, they usually tell you worse or even worse. And you have to pick between two. You have 5 minutes, right? And I was like, this is different. All right. So now we're going to negotiate boundaries, right? Like, what is the pay good? Is the time off good? So like, I think my experience, like I've interacted with over 400 clients in building my business, especially on that boundary piece and like structuring your work-life balance. That's probably the biggest thing he took from it. So like, I would help him word responses to difficult conversations, or how would we position him to a recruiter effectively that he really does deserve to be paid more, or these are the kind of jobs he's looking for. So that's probably the biggest way.
So it's just a team effort. You know, no one fights alone. No one grows alone. And no one's going to be alone at Military Creator Con. Some people get nervous coming to these big conferences with all these people they don't know. Uh-huh. But it's really at these conferences where you can meet someone like yourself who has, uh-huh. who's not just selling a book. Like, you've walked your talk. You've had to come yeah. from the military side moving 14 times. Like, I don't uh-huh. know how you've done that. Uh-huh. And then offer this information to the people coming. As we get closer to Military Creator Con, people are on the fence about coming.
Mm.
Why should they come?
I mean, there's two parts to it to me, and they are okay. equally valuable, right? So part one is just the variety of speakers and the presentations they're giving. I just made my own schedule of what I want to attend, and there were multiple times I was like, there's two or three things at the same time that I'd like to be at because they're that good. So that's part one. It's like just amazing speakers on a variety of topics. You're going to leave with a to-do list that's big, right? You're going to leave with new ideas. The second part is the conversations that happen not on the stages. It's pulling that person aside who asked a really good question in another session that you heard. It's finding that speaker from yesterday that you didn't have time to ask your question to, but you want to connect and make sure you stay connected on LinkedIn. So to me, that's really where the value is at. This is not a sit and attend the sessions and leave and go about your day individually. This is very much about networking and connecting. And I've been to a lot of conferences and I really feel that is so true about this one. So I think if you're on the fence or if you're like, well, I'm by myself, this is going to be awkward. This is not the community for that. Like, people, like, go talk to people, go ask questions, go hang out with people, attend the social events. You're going to get just as much, if not more, out of that than the sessions that you attend.
You've gone through this part of your career. You're sharing this portion of your journey with us. What is next for you and your professional aspirations, Laura?
Well, so these days I kind of work as a fractional chief operating officer or chief marketing officer, but I'm also expanding what I write about. So all of my books are in the business and career space, but my agent is currently shopping my first narrative nonfiction American history book kids book. So I'm kind of like just kind of expanding my ecosystem a little bit broader to try some new things that maybe I don't quite have the full expertise in yet, but trying to push and grow and step outside of that comfort zone.
So we're going to have a lot of authors at Military Creator Con. I'm sure you're excited to talk with them. Mm-hmm. Just a bonus then, isn't it?
Yeah. It's amazing how many people that you're going to meet who have done something cool that you are interested in, like writing a book or giving a paid speech or doing a TEDx or starting a podcast. I mean, there's just so many examples, right? So that's why it's so cool to attend and be there in person, because you're going to be able to ask questions of these people. You're going to be able to interact. You're going to be able to form relationships, right? Like, going all the way back to when I first met James in 2020, it's like that's a long-term relationship and like connection that we have. So that's what I really look forward to. Take advantage of it. Go to the schedule. Look at who's speaking. Read their bio, right? Like, who are the people? Like, I even put it on one of the sessions I want to attend. I'm like, I've known this person for 5 years, but we've never met. I'm attending just for the purpose of shaking her hand. You know what I mean? So it's that kind of cool stuff. So just take advantage of it.
So let's play a little game with the time we have left. You know, I'm coming to you saying, hey, Laura, I'm trying to get with somebody who can just get my scheduling down because I hate Calendly and I like my Outlook and I got that down, but I need to get this right. I need a human being to do it. Okay. So I know I need that person maybe 2 hours a week. Okay. I need them to have access to my Outlook calendar and I need them to treat certain emails a certain way so they go in different folders. I want to start there. What else am I missing, or do I have the basic requirements right?
Yeah, I think you kind of have those basic requirements right. I would even expand a little more and say, are there other related tasks that may not need to be done every single week, but might be like one-offs that the same type of person could do, right? Like, could they reply to certain very similar emails that I get on my behalf? Could they communicate with people before I have a meeting with them to share the agenda? Like, are there other things where maybe it's not every time that I work with them each week, but I want to know if anyone applying to the job also has these other skills that may come in handy, because it may be something where you could expand the work you do with that person.
Like, say, MailChimp or creating emailing list would be like, because I'm looking at that and I'm like, okay, based on what you said, I might want someone just to be an assistant with someone to handle my inbound, outbound email. So it really is what you said. You have to really define your requirements. And then I guess my next question is how do you figure out what's a fair rate to pay somebody?
That's a hard one, right? So we want to take into account that anyone we hire as an independent contractor is paying their own taxes. They may have to carry workers' comp insurance. So they're taking on a lot of responsibility. So we don't necessarily want to pay them dirt cheap, right? Because they have to factor that into the rates that they charge. So it might be different than what you would pay an hourly employee is the point that I'm trying to make. You may be able to get an hourly employee at $20 or $25 an hour, but a freelancer is going to charge $30 an hour and up for the same type of task. So that's what I would do. And then when I interview people, or even when I ask them to fill out a form that they're interested in potentially coming on to a freelance position with me, that's another reason we have to list out all the tasks. As I say, these are the types of tasks I'm asking you to do. What rate or range would you charge for this type of work? They're not 100% guaranteeing that's the rate, but you've given them enough information to pretty confidently answer that. And then you can kind of see in the responses you get. You're going to get some high end, you're going to get some low end. You're probably going to find some really good people in that middle to high end category. And that will also tell you a little bit about what the going rate. And then there are some organizations like the Editorial Freelancers Association. They carry rate sheets for specific types of freelancing, writing, ghostwriting, copy editing, proofreading, that sort of thing. So you can see if there's a professional organization that would give you kind of a general number of where people might start.
And then as I onboard the person, they're working out great. Is there ever a time where it's like, you know what, it would make sense to either expand the scope of what they're doing, or you know what? This is a really good relationship. I want to make them a full-time employee. Have you ever had that happen?
Yes, that can definitely happen. And I have seen that happen. I've been in that position before as well. So I have definitely seen that happen. And there can be situations when it can work really well to step into a full-time role. It's just a conversation you want to have with the person to make sure it's a good fit for you and it's a good fit for them.
So freelancing can work. You all are truly professionals. And it's just understanding how to navigate your requirements with their expertise to get the outcome you want.
Absolutely. I would completely agree with that.
Well, Laura, I'm excited to meet you in a couple of weeks at Military Creator Con in Arlington, Texas. There's the link. You can still get tickets. You can still come on. If you're on the fence, don't be. Laura, when you get there, you know, who's the first person you want to see?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, James and Mara have done so much work on this conference that I just want to give Mara a breather and a hug to be like, you did it. You made it. You know what I mean?
So
that's going to be my first stop because she's put in a lot of work behind the scenes to make this an amazing conference.
Absolutely. 100%. I cannot agree more. Well, there you have it, folks. Again, another great presenter, another great contributor to the military community who has walked this talk, walked this journey. Laura, thank you for your time. We will see you in a couple of weeks, and there's still time to get your tickets. We'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
At militarycreatorcon.com.
Great XQ. Roger, over.